Hi, and welcome to another episode of Rule of Carnage. This is where myself, Glenn Ford, a games designer and developer, and this guy, Mike Hutchinson, also a games designer and developer, talk about designing better miniatures games. So we were talking a couple of weeks ago. I think it was on the Christmas episode, actually, about horror in games and horror as a genre as opposed to sort of horror as an experience. And I've been thinking about that a little over the last few weeks, and I wanted to have a chat about it, about whether designing a horror game, particularly whether designing a horror tabletop game is possible, the ways in which it's possible, whether it's possible as an experience as opposed to a genre thing, whether it's a cursed problem, all those sorts of things. Now, without wanting to get overly philosophical on the subject, Nietzsche described terror.
You've gotten overly philosophical, people.
Yeah, that's not overly philosophical. It's a fairly introductory philosopher. Nietzsche described beauty as the beginning of terror when we stand awed that it deigns not to destroy us. And I think there's something deeply connective about visual horror and beauty and uncanniness and the way that we understand things that we are looking at. I think of visual horror to be constantly seeking to play with the thing that is looked at but not understood. And we see that in sort of uncanny horror, where a thing is shaped wrongly or positioned wrongly or cosmically strange. We see that even in sort of basic jump scare horror, where you don't want to look at the thing because it's very gory, and so you look away, and so you're not really sure what you saw, or the thing comes and goes very quickly, so you're not aware of what it is visually. And in that way, I think a lot of the horror that we experience and are aware of and are shown as horror is about a visual experience, and about a visual experience that is about not understanding things. Then we come to tabletop games, which are not sort of as an art form of visual experience. They include visual things, but I think that's a separate sort of connected art form. And they are intrinsically about understanding the mechanisms that you are engaging with. You have to understand how to run the game. You have to give people the information about all the things that are on the tabletop. And so you have to undermine it. It's like trying to do a joke on the tabletop. You know, you have to tell everybody all of the punchlines, you know, so that they can operate the machinery. And then you want them to be surprised by the ending of the joke. And is it at that point then possible to create horror as an experience? Now, I think it is. I think it is because you have to go a slightly different route. And we'll sort of hopefully get to examining that. I just wondered if you had any sort of opinions on, because I know that you're a fan of the idea of horror as genre on the tabletop. And obviously you've engaged with the idea of horror as a game with Perilous Tales.
I think horror as genre is a very different beast. It can be a very different beast insofar as horror as genre can be a collection of enjoyable trappings than aesthetics and tropes, which add up to something very pulpy or very cartoony, but that still tap into a sort of an aesthetic universe that you like. It's, you know, there is an enormous amount of heavy metal that taps into horror tropes, but doesn't do so in a way that is literally trying to frighten you. Then you get the occasional like heavy metal records, you know, particularly kind of, you know, very spaced out things or dark things where it's like, okay, this is genuinely unsettling. And like, if I listen to this on a dark road in the car by myself, like this can be an unsettling experience. So it's for sure, like, you know, it's a spectrum, but I think that I've always been delighted by horror as, you know, as genre. And for me, I think, I find that there is, alongside the visual element, there is also a conceptual unsettling thing that's important for me. So this is maybe a corny example, but like one of the things that I was surprised by the most when I rewatched it was The Omen, which I watched as a kid and found laughably bad. And then as a grown-up who was not yet a father but was considering children, I found it deeply unsettling, the idea that the child that I had brought into the world might not be my own child and might in fact be, you know, a devil child and filled with murderous rage. And like, that was unsettling in a completely new and conceptual way that was quite surprising to me, you know. And so I think, like, you know, when you read horror books that are effective, and I haven't read that many, but like, I'm only at the beginning of House of Leaves at the moment, but I already want to put it in the freezer. Like, it's just some, like, and it's not a ton of visual stuff. It's like just upsetting or unsettling ideas, concepts. And so I suppose where I would be, where my mind goes are two directions, which is I love corny, pulpy horror tropes, and I think that they do a lot for a certain kind of audience member for a certain kind of game, and I don't know how to do it, but I'm interested in, is there some way of conceptually unsettling people as while you, as you say, have like all of the possibilities already laid out, and is it that, you know, there's some kind of zip up of those things or sequencing of those things or narrative association with my things that suddenly makes that like, oh, ow, that's a bit close, that's actually unsettling. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very true what you're saying about the fact that there's like, there's horror as genre, and it's, you know, you're saying about things that use horror genre tropes for actually being scary. It's that there's like a teen girls cartoon thing, isn't there? A Monster University or Monster something, which is like,
maybe
there's like a girl version of a teenage Frankenstein and a werewolf and a, you know, all the universal horror sort of tropes. And it's like, that's clearly horror as genre, but it is on no level to even small children even intended to be scary. You know, it's a series of romances and sort of teen experiences and things of that nature. And again, it's interesting because they're using like the outsider status of monsters and the things they go through to sort of relate back to the experience of children in a way that many horrors have related to the experience of coming of age, you know, to give way to their horror. And then, yes, I think that there is another thing that is about the experience of horror. And I want to relate back, I think, to what you can do on the tabletop, to sort of what I was saying about the horror of the unknown. You know, I think it's Lovecraft says that the greatest horror is the horror of the unknown. And while you can have a genre horror game that says, you know, okay, well, what's going to happen is it's going to be lots of zombies and you don't have enough bullets and you can't hold them off. And, you know, a certain number of your people are going to die. And it's really about whether, like, the last guy manages to crawl into the bunker rather than about whether you wipe out all the zombies. And it's like, oh, great, fine. Nothing scary about this. But I understand I'm doing Day of the Dead. I'm doing this horror film, that horror film. Lovely. Oh, look, it's hit the horror beats of my favorite film. I think that the thing that tabletop games can do, and in many ways in relation to the conversation, obviously can do, is ask you to make an unpleasant, unknown, you know, sucker's bet choice. You know, I can... If I said to you, there's two boxes in, you know, in front of you, you've got to stick your hand into one of them, like Peter Duncan, and one's got a bear trap in it and the other one's empty, that's literally a Saw film right there. That's definitely has horror elements to it. That's definitely an unpleasant experience. And I really think, like, what we often perceive as analysis paralysis is quite an uncanny moment. There's sometimes you come across a game and you're there, and you just suddenly get this moment where you're going, I just don't know, and you just have to pick something. And there's a bit where you're like in midair and the wheels are spinning and you know there's nothing underneath you, and you have to make this sort of completely free choice, and it's a very sort of existentialist horror moment. And then you just pick, and then you just find out what you, whether it was wrong or not. And we try and give people ways of being able to pick intelligently and ways of letting people weigh the scales one way or another against their opponent. But I'm thinking more and more about that process of bluffing and betting and not knowing, and the weird moment of not knowing and having to pick and knowing that there's something nasty on one of the end of those choices. And
I mean, I guess what two places my mind immediately goes is, one is, in a certain form, there's a name that we give to that, and it's called gotchas. And there's a wrong way to do those, and they feel crummy. And the other way that my mind's going is that, like, after one of those incredibly tense moments of, like, there are two boxes, I don't know which one, like, when your opponent then pulls out, like, the answer, and it's like, haha, and now I've just cut your head off, and you're like, oh, and there's this moment of, like, emotional sort of ecstatic sort of, it's like the best, it can be one of the best and highest points of playing these kinds of games, is where you are bested and the sword enters your body metaphorically, and you're like, damn it, I didn't, and you did, and and going back to that first point, it's like, and if that happens in such a way that, like, I am not immediately going, yeah, but I couldn't possibly have known that, enough for crying out loud. And
no, absolutely. And this is the thing. It's like, and I think in relation to the idea of horror as experience, you absolutely don't want a gotcha moment that just cuts your head off, because that's not the rhythm of horror. You build up beats of tension and you escalate towards a point. Horror, I think, shares a lot with tragedy in that the protagonist usually drives themselves towards the terrible moment by their own choices.
That's true, but narrative very, very often has a central protagonist with a lot of, like, bodies that can be shared along the way. And miniature games, particularly skirmish miniature games, tend to be the same, where there's, you know, there's a couple of models that will end the game probably, and many of them will fall on the way, and so that, like, reduction of resource is part of that.
Yeah, but I think that's a sort of, that's a paying off that we as players are aware of and accepting of. And specifically, the experience that sort of keeps popping into my head in relation to this, that I sort of think about playing around with, is the experience of being on your own late at night. And this might be an entirely personal experience I'm just opening up here. The experience of being on your own late at night and getting a little bit freaked out and wanting to look over your shoulder, but knowing that if you look over your shoulder once, you've got to keep looking over your shoulder every 30 seconds, and you're going to have to look over your shoulder harder and more severely, until eventually, if you look over your shoulder once, you're going to have to, like, find a human being and turn all the lights on within the next 5 minutes, because you're going to have a full freak out if you don't otherwise.
Yeah, sometimes I remember that bit in Twin Peaks where he remembers the man behind the bed. And that's exactly, like, sometimes I'm just walking around the garden in the night, like, having put the chickens away, and I'll be like, I'm not going to look in that bush again, because if it turns out there was a dude in that bush.
Like... Yeah, and it's like, whereas it's like, if I don't look over my shoulder even once, I'll be fine. I can fight the feeling off, and it's okay, and I can get control of it again and go on with what I was doing. But you know that if you look once, you're done. It's over with. It's just going to be a downhill escalation, and you're sort of ruined. And I think that moment of like being offered a choice that there's something maybe behind you, and you look and it's something you have to deal with, which is a certain sort of problematic. But if you look and there's nothing there, that's a bigger problem for you. And it traces back to me to the thing that John Carpenter said, you hear a scratching at the door and you hear a scratching at the door and you're freaking out and you're really upset. And eventually you build up your courage and you open the door and there's a 6 foot tall cockroach standing there. And you go, thank Christ, it wasn't a 50 foot tall cockroach. And it's like turning around and seeing the monster is a lot of the time better than turning around and not seeing the monster, because that's actually the worst fundamental final end of just turning around and around and around on yourself and the madness just building up and building up to a crescendo until you're totally done with. And you know, sort of reading a sort of a certain amount of Lovecraftian and Lovecraftian adjacent sort of cosmic horror, I do think there is a horror-based experience available based on offering people choices, you know, where the gotcha that you turn around and there's a bad thing is the better option, because that's the release and then that's something you just engage with, whereas the empty box is the bad thing to see, because when you're actually falling to fear, turning around and seeing nothing is the thing that sort of goes, well, that's it, I may as well just give up, try to go to bed now, because I'm just, you know, I'm on the downward spiral. And that's those are the sort
have you of, have you a mechanical implementation of this in mind?
I've got something I'm kicking around somewhere that I've been fiddling about with for a little while, inspired by the works of originally inspired by the works of Thomas Ligotti, sort of Lovecraft adjacent-y feeling author who writes wonderfully sort of weird and uncanny stuff. But that's the thing that I've been kicking around, the idea that's been sort of knocking about in my head over the last sort of couple of weeks as to whether you can do horror, because like I say, I wondered about doing comedy in tabletop games. I've wondered about doing horror. They feel like things that should be cursed problems, things that...
Potentially. I mean, I think one of the things that makes them so tricky, but I think this is what makes them tricky in role-playing games as well, is, or what makes horror tricky, comedy's easier, is that you need, to a degree, you need a willing atmosphere. You need a place in which that beat works, because there's the atmosphere, there's the story, there's the right tension in the room. And in a video game or in a movie, like, that can be very manufactured, very carefully manufactured, so that, you know, you've got the lighting, you've got the sound cues, you know, it can be very effective. Whereas in a collaborative game, if we were using miniatures, like, Is there just a situation where, because we're just horsing about, or because the lighting's really bright, or because it's, you know, Sunday morning and we're hungover, like, we don't get anything resembling that. And so, yes, there's a way of creating that experience, but it isn't like a reliable experience. It's one that has to be like in the context of a specific situation, which, you know, probably when examined, that's probably true of lots of things. Like, if I'm in a grump, like, are we going to enjoy our game of, you know, Infinity as much as we normally do, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that almost every game requires a level of coming together, you know, in sort of the right spirit. I mean, one of my favorite tabletop games is a thing called Nyctophobia, which was the designer created it with their uncle in mind, who's blind, and they would design a game that you could play if you were totally blind. And it's a teens being chased through the woods by a serial killer game. And all but one player puts on completely blacked out glasses so they can't see anything. And the other player is a serial killer and plays by taking other people's hands and leading their hands to the board. And they have to feel physically where the pieces are to figure out where to go. Now, if the serial killer plays this as a fully like totally competitive game. It's horribly unfair. It's really not balanced. It's the serial killer can just win it very easily. But if they decide to play with their food a little bit and mess around with you and give you some opportunities, it's an incredibly good game.
So there's an invitation for one of the players to sort of storytell and games master.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's, ironically, if the serial killer player is more sadistic, you get a better experience. If he just puts everyone out of their misery, it's no fun because it's not competitive. But if they decide to go, maybe you'll make it, then you have a really, really great game there.
I mean, I think that opens up an intriguing line of inquiry for me, which, you know, maybe there's a secondary conversation in this as well, but it's like, two-player games, particularly adversarial two-player games, bring with them a lot of design constraints. They solve a lot of design problems. That's why we build a lot of games this way. But particularly when it comes to horror, maybe you have to start from a more than two players or a non-adversarial position, then place spatial relationships into the mix, and that's how you get more quickly and easily to something that is actually an enjoyably effective sort of unsettling or uncanny experience. Whereas if you try and do that as like, okay, well, it's basically Space Hulk or it's aliens versus, you know, versus Marines, like maybe that's just always destined to end up as many games do.
Yeah, and it's tricky. It's like I've once or twice brought up the idea of like trying to create the experience of horror, you know, as opposed to the genre of horror in a tabletop game. And what other people have said is, if you're giving your opponent the opportunity, you're trying to give the opponent the opportunity to actually freak somebody out, that's very problematic in relation to like actual, you know, lines of consent and,
right,
you know, and experience and et cetera, et cetera. And it's tough because it's like, well, you're always giving your opponent the sort of the permission to, like, frankly, piss you off and ruin your evening, you know, and make you cry, right, as they sort of crush you into the dirt. And it's odd to say, like, making you scared or freaked out is a different kind of permission to that permission. And particularly where it's like, but I'm going into a situation where I want to watch a horror movie. I want to get a bit freaked out. I don't watch The Shining and go like, Kubrick, you have ruined my dreams. You know, it's like, wow, brilliant. That weird bear masked guy really fucks with my hair. You know, it's like, that's an excellent thing. And so the idea of it being like, oh, well, if they actually freak you out, well, that's kind of the ride you paid for. But I understand, like, it is more problematic creating an oppositional game where the engines are built to allow somebody to mess with somebody else's head to some degree. So
yeah, totally. I mean, I guess that comes with just all of the like safety technology that we already understand from role-playing games and to a lesser degree like folk horror games. Like there needs to be safety equipment blended into that so that, you know,
yeah,
when you accidentally wander into something which is like just genuinely upsetting for someone because of their history or, you know, some context that you don't have access to, or somebody is just, you know, willfully ignoring the signals and pushing past someone's comfort levels, like there are understood toolkits and techniques for dealing with that. So I guess if in RPG design or folk horror design, we can already move past that as solved, then I think we can move past that as solved.
Yeah, I do agree. And ultimately, you know, in an RPG, the games master or whatever can offer you something genuinely disturbing that you did not know or see coming. I think in a tabletop game, there are always going to be certain sort of like, look, there's a limit to what the other guy can actually offer you. They can offer, we, you know, we've given, these are the boxes, and you can go like, I can mess with your like analysis paralysis, uncanny unhappiness about wanting to unwrap the unpleasant present that's being offered you, and see a weird chicken thing as opposed to, you know, whatever. But he can't really get, he can't like genuinely bring up something that wasn't in this book. These are the pages and these are the limitations and these are the things that can ultimately happen to you. And hopefully I can put you in a place where, knowing that that thing is coming and that it's been building up, makes you feel a certain sort of experiential fear without risking the case where it's like, yeah, it's just the same as like when you're playing a game and somebody's got you fully cornered and you're in the experiential thing of, oh great, well this is so much fun as I just get mushed into base. But yeah,
that... Well, I'm terrified this conversation might never come to a conclusion, but I think that's super interesting. You've kind of framed up, I guess, like a design challenge, a design gauntlet has been thrown down here.
Yeah.
I'm coming away from this conversation with some ideas, but not any strong confidence that I know how I would achieve this. I'm excited to see how your line of investigation sort of continues here. But I think I'm super interested to see if this line of inquiry inspires other people who can perhaps see further than I can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always think the best questions are ones where you don't know how you're going to proceed with them the first time that they come up to you. I'm always interested in things that I don't know how to do when I start doing them. Those are the things that drive my designs. Yeah, I mean, if anybody has an opinion on the idea of like the difference between, you know, genre and experience of horror as, you know, the importance it can have on the tabletop, whether it's an achievable goal, whether it's, you know, a genuinely cursed problem. Love to hear those comments down in the comments section. Obviously, if you do go down there, drop one of those comments, give a like and subscribe while you're down there. And after dropping the comment, you know, swing by the Discord. Genuinely sort of interested in having this conversation and working it through and kicking ideas around, as many people in the Discord certainly are. You can look me up on social media. You can look Mike up on social media. I assume the accounts are out there. I don't know that he necessarily...
I'm going to shut them down. I just haven't posted to them much.
A lot of social media is just shouting into a bin. So, you know, go for it and have a go. Check out Mike on Patreon to sponsor the channel and his further creations. But from now, from this episode of Rule of Carnage, it'll be a thank you and goodbye. So thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.